rifling through those long boxes.
It's gotta be here. Aha! Here it is!
And bagging those books.
I'm out of bags and boards again.
Welcome to your home for Star Wars comics.
The Cosmic Force Podcast.
A Youtini Podcast Network production.
And now, here are your hosts, Parker Kirk, Caleb Laminek, and Jacob Bosch.
Hello and welcome to The Cosmic Force, a weekly breakdown of the latest Star Wars comics brought to you by the Youtini Podcast Network. I'm your host, Jacob, joined by my good friends, Oz and Caleb. This week, we're diving in on The High Republic number 5 and Jango Fett number 1 to give you our in-depth reactions and analysis. This week, we are brought to you by Bounty Hunt. If you want to check out the latest in Star Wars television coverage, you can check out Bounty Hunt every week, usually Thursdays, and we'll cover the latest episode of The Bad Batch. But also, this past week, we covered the new trailer for The Acolyte, so check out Acolyte coverage as well this summer. All right, Oz, Caleb, we're back. I'm back from a fun little trip, but how are you all doing?
I'm doing pretty great here. I'm, actually pretty much most of the way moved in. You can't see it now because we're not video anymore, but I actually have a little bookshelf there with all my Star Wars books and comics and D&D stuff, so it feels real again. Like, I feel like I have my own place and my nice little rocking chair, too, which is just out of range for my microphone, so I can't be that comfortable while I'm doing this show, but maybe one of these years.
That's great, man. Congratulations on the new space. I know how much fun that is in moving.
Is the is the flag going up in the background pretty soon, or is that...
I dig that poster. Like, I got a crap ton of posters from our Secret Santa Thank You Awe, so I think those might be going up on this wall here behind me. It's like, I'm seeing them actually right there. They're just on the floor next to, like, on the opposite side of my place. Like a promise. Like, I will get to you one of these months.
I don't think that was me. I don't think I got you, though.
Oh, sorry, no, Frank. Sorry.
Yeah. Like, I have no reference.
For some reason, I was thinking Frank Oz.
Oh, yeah, which, hey, Star Wars.
Yeah, it is Star Wars related, but no,
I was
Frank,
about to do a Yoda impression, but I'm so bad at it. I have to read books to my kid every night, and he loves the one with Yoda in it. I try to do the voice, and I just can't. Other than that, I'm doing great as well.
Disappointing your son?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, he doesn't know what Yoda sounds like, so as far as he knows, I'm great. No new house for me, but we are in the very beginnings of March Madness, which is exciting right now as of the recording. The Texas Longhorns, which is the team I support despite not having gone to that school, they are up 12 with 2 minutes to play. Anyone listening to this will obviously know who won this game and who won the second round as well, because that's how recording ahead of time works. But I'm rooting for the Horns. Jacob's got Purdue. And Caleb, are you paying attention at all?
Is Georgia Tech in there?
I don't think so.
Is Georgia in there?
Definitely not.
I was about to say, if Georgia was in there, whoever they're against, that's usually how it goes. But,
Tennessee is in there, which I feel like is anti-Georgia by proxy.
That counts. Auburn as well. Like my
Auburn's
family.
Okay.
Like
Auburn's a good team.
We'll pull for Auburn into War Eagles.
All right.
Nice. Yeah. If there are actual serious college basketball fans in our community, I'm probably gonna get dragged for being a Purdue fan. So hopefully I'm not depressed by the time this episode actually drops next week. So.
Hey, you're a one seed. What could possibly go wrong?
Yeah, what could go wrong? I was there at the last game, so,
Remember you were playing in the band.
I was courtside at the FDU game. So,
all right.
That sucked. Anyways, outside of sports, we've been reading some stuff. I don't know about you guys. I finished Defy the Storm this past weekend, and I had a pretty good time with it. I won't spoil it, obviously, because I know Oz is still working on it. But it was fun. It felt like a sequel to Out of the Shadows, but I know Out of the Shadows was not people's favorite. This was a very much an improvement over Out of the Shadows, so I liked it quite a bit. Interested to see where we're going after the epilogue without saying anything, so, yeah.
Yeah, well, would you believe it if I told you I not only finished Defy
the Storm,
but also made big progress on Dune?
Wow, no.
You shouldn't believe it. Yeah. I've got a little over 100 pages left in Defy the Storm. I finally have gotten into a good pace. I think the reason that it's taking longer for me is because I don't remember Out of the Shadows at all. That was like 3 years ago. And there's a lot of characters in this book that have only been in sort of this side of the High Republic. They haven't
forgot Jordana and Zyla. I mean, I knew they were around, but I didn't really, I'm like, I don't really remember your story that well.
So I would love to do a big refresher. Like, I should have revisited Into the Dark and Out of the Shadows before this, but I didn't. Here we are. It's picking up, though, about halfway through. It takes a long time to set up. And like, Dune's still sitting on my shelf.
I totally forgot about Out of Shadows, to be fair. Like, I haven't even read... I realize just right now that I haven't even read this part of the High Republic. I thought I was really good on Phase 1. I thought I got all of it, but I guess I didn't do Out of Shadows. Now, Into the Dark, which I always get those two confused, was great. I think that's actually a...
That's the first one.
Yeah. I feel like that's like a bet. It might even be a better jumping on point for certain points of the High Republic than Light of the Jedi, maybe.
All right, I
disagree with that. I think it's a great book, but and I might even like it better than Light of the Jedi. But as far as a jumping on point, disagree.
Now, I think feel like it's timeline it is technically ahead.
I feel like it's just like a little bit more of its own self-contained story, and it doesn't introduce 14 characters just to kill them off in the first, like, 14 pages. Like, it actually, it feels like a Doctor Who bottle episode, you know?
That's a good way to put it. It is a side thing, which then, of course, becomes very important, because it introduces the Drengir.
Mm-hmm. Because those are real important.
Yeah, and we're about to talk about them here in a minute.
Are we?
We might.
All right. Oh. All right, well, Caleb, what have you been reading?
I'm getting back a little bit into manga. I'm trying to finish off the Licious and Dungeon, or Dungeon Meshi. They're making the anime of it right now on Netflix, and it is some top-tier food and also dungeon delving action there. Nice. Like, it's fantastically well-written. The more you read and watch it, the more you want to play D&D, essentially. It, like, really encourages you. You know, it's great because the basic premise is that we have a team of adventurers going through like a kind of a mega dungeon here, but they're all out of supplies. So the only way that they can feed themselves is they have to, you know, kill and cook what all the monsters they come across. So, you know, they have to eat things like cockatrices and, you know, basilisks and, you know, mandrakes and things like that. It's really well thought out and fun little romp there until the stakes get really high, in which case it's our fun little action series.
There you go. All right, well, we read some stuff. Oh, sorry, go ahead.
That's so out of my wheelhouse, comics about eating food. I feel like there's a whole world of manga I am just not familiar with, because you mentioned that Superman food comic as well.
It's a weird subgenre. Like, you isn't, like, there's like a super long running series that's like that ran for like 20 years about just a guy going to different places eating food, but is canceled because he made it the character made an offhanded remark about how, you know, the Japanese government didn't do a great job handling the Fukushima nuclear reactor disaster, and because he threw a little bit of shade on the government, he got canceled.
Well, there you go.
It's like wild.
Isn't there like a really popular like anime called like Food Wars or something like that?
That's a little okay. Spicy, if you get right. My
I don't actually watch anime, so I've heard the title, no idea what it's about, so there
it's,
we go.
It's a little wild, it's a little
not,
crazy.
Okay, not actually about food, cool. All right,
it is about food, but it also does blow people's clothes off.
All right, well, so we got some news. a few different things. We got our first preview of Maul Black, White, and Red, which is starting up in April 24th, and it's a nice little adventure with Maul and Darth Sidious, and looks kind of interesting. You know, it's a classic. Here's like 8 pages with no text, but it looks cool. I'm sure it's gonna be awesome. I've been seeing a lot more variant covers for it, so that's exciting.
Dude, all the covers that have come out are so sick. Like,
they even got the Recluse himself out. Wait,
Frank Miller.
Oh yeah, Frank Miller.
Miller, one of the goats. I saw some people hating on this cover. I'm like, dudes, y'all just don't get it. It's such a sick cover. And I think, honestly, I know that Maul's whole thing is looking cool. I think he's the coolest looking character in Star Wars. We get so many Darth Vader comics and variants. Like, mm-hmm. Let's switch that over to Darth Maul, because he's just made to look badass. All these covers bang.
I think, like, the big thing for me is, like, with someone like George Miller, is someday, like 20 years down the road, you're going to like look back at like, you know, him or like, was it George Perez or like some of these like big artists who have like, George Perez is the one that kind of died recently, I think.
Yes.
Yeah, that like have done like one or two Star Wars things and you're like, damn, like that was crazy that this like huge comic book artist got to do at least like something Star Wars in their life.
Yeah, and I mean, that's one of the great things about variant covers. Like, I would love if they would get Frank Miller to do 8 pages of a Maul story or even a full issue. But one, that's probably expensive. He probably doesn't want to. But, I mean, if they can pay him, you know, a ton of money to do one variant, sure. I mean, when you look at the list, especially in, like, the 77 run or the Marvel UK, for instance, a lot of big names. Alan Miller wrote a Star Wars story or two. So, yeah, now... I said Alan Miller, Alan Moore.
Moore, right. I was about to say the other. When I said, you know, the crazy comic recluse, I was like, wait, that's Alan Moore.
Also very recluse. Nowadays, I would be shocked if he took a Star Wars. That would be wild. But there's a lot of big names, and now Frank Miller gets to join that pantheon.
Yeah, for sure. Well, outside of that, we also have some other news. Dr. Aphra, the 2020 run, won the GLAAD award for the best comic book of the year. GLAAD is like they run the awards for like LGBTQ representation in media. So really super cool to see the Alyssa's Dr. Aphra run win that, especially after the original Dr. Aphra run with Kieran Gillen won this same award as well. So
I was about to say, I thought it, I wasn't sure if like Aphra had won it before or if the like the same run of the 2020 had run it won it last year. I'd forgotten, but I do know like that this is not Aphra's first appearance at those awards.
Yep, for sure.
Yeah, I have not read any of these other books that are nominated, but I mean, there's a lot of big names on there from Marvel and DC as well as a few other things. But regardless, Aphra's great, so I'm going to say it was extremely well deserved, despite being slightly biased. So if you haven't read Aphra, I'd be shocked that you're listening to this, but go check it out.
It's done now. You can just read it all. So,
oh, yeah.
And for now, convenient omnibus in 2 trade paperbacks.
Yeah. Well,
and a third omnibus probably at some point. I don't want to talk about that.
No. Anyways, we have some very, very exciting news. This next one, the last piece of news for all of our sickos out there. A collection that dropped last night. Oz and I were in, are about to start recording. We kind of had a little mini freak out. It is a Star Wars Vader's Castle, the Deluxe Library Collection hardcover coming out September 24th. This is a collection of all of the Vader's Castle comics from Cabin Scott that was released under IDW. They were not all collected ever because Ghosts of Vader's Castle was started to be published when the deal kind of, or when like the license fell through. So there have been some issues floating around there that have never been collected. So this collection will have Tales from Vader's Castle, Return to Vader's Castle, Shadow of Vader's Castle, Ghost of Vader's Castle, and a free comic book day story from 2019 that is also in that kind of Vader's Castle realm. Interestingly enough, this is a hardcover collection from Dark Horse, who has not done many hardcover collections, like the Rebels and all the High Republic stuff has been trade paperback, even like the omnibus versions. The only time they've done hardcover has been with things Cabin Scott has written, with Tales from the Rancor's Pit and Tales from the Death Star. So,
both different sizes, and this
correct,
like it'll be a third size. It's oversized, so probably an omnibus size. I didn't actually check the Amazon listing for the measurements.
I don't think it had. Yeah, it doesn't have them. Yeah. So,
But it is. I was just looking this up because I might legitimately buy this for all the things that come out. Like, I really like this run and would love to have a actual physical edition. It's only, what is this, $49.99, $50? That's not bad for the amount of comic that was shoved into those ones.
Yeah, I think it's like 20 plus comics or something like that. So,
I looked over. I do have a large Dark Horse book, but this was like a one-off graphic novel, so it's sort of a weird size. It's not quite omnibus size, so that doesn't really help as a fact-finding mission. I'm just really excited about this one because I loved these comics. I think they're really good and really underrated. I liked the two that Dark Horse has done, but these I think were still better. Also, like Jacob said, Ghost did get its own little trade paperback, but the problem was they were all the small old IDW size.
The digest size.
Also, Shadow of Vader's Castle was a one shot, so it didn't match. And I actually never bought it because I was hoping a book like this would happen eventually. So here we're getting it. I was so close so many times to buying all the single issues and binding them myself, or rather paying someone competent to do it. But now I don't have to. So Dark Horse just saved me a lot of money. I'm very thankful for that. Buy this book. One, because it's great. Two, because it'll encourage them to collect the rest of the Adventures 2020 issues. That
yeah, that's the real dream, is that they finally get everything that was released by IDW in some form of trade or something.
I think there's 14 more issues that were never collected, plus a couple annuals, those Jackson annuals. Plus,
we got some annuals. Yeah, those are also pressing, but you know. Yeah.
One step at a time. They came out strong with Rebels a couple years ago, and now we're doing this. Dark Horse can be erratic, but when they hit it out of the park, they really hit it out of the park.
You just have to wait maybe two more months than you thought you would for that hit to leave the ballpark. But, you know, once it happens, it's great.
Yeah, they take the first three pitches, if we're going to continue this metaphor, and then they swing hard.
Yeah, for sure.
I think that's probably the end of it, of that metaphor.
All right, well. A lot of news. We've already spent 15 minutes talking, and we have two comic books to talk about, so we're going to be hitting them fast. The first one up is The High Republic number 5, Monster and Apprentice, written by Kevin Scott with art from Ario Anandito. This is also, I guess we should take a moment.
A little bit more news.
Yeah, Ario said this is his last issue of The High Republic. Very sad. You know, an icon, a legend. Like an architect of the High Republic.
We have a trailblazer here of its like vision.
Yeah, we interviewed him back in like 2022, I think, and had a great time. He's a super chill dude. So hopefully this means he's getting some other really nice work somewhere else. Maybe it's like a Paolo Villanelli situation where he was so good, Marvel just stole him from Star Wars. And I kind of hope that's what's happening. But yeah, no more Ario. He's also joined this issue from Marika Cresta and Mark Morales with the art and colors from Jim Campbell. But, pour one out for buddy Ario. Anyways, Caleb, on that somber note, what happened to this comic issue?
Some kind of equally sad stuff. So on the jungle planet of Crystorn, our party of Jedi is split up into two parts. On one hand, we have Keeve and Lorna D attempting to find Skeer. But when they do find him, he has lost all reason, and a fight ensues, in which Lorna does most of the aggression and attacking. At the same time, the other team is having issues, as both Serret and Tarek almost come to blows with one another due to the rising tension between them, and they split up, whereupon Tarek is attacked by the Dengar, and then Serret is also attacked by the Nameless, so two ancient foes coming back in, well, one ancient foe and one modern foe, attacking them on two ends here. But a hooded figure reveals these to be just illusions, and the pair regain their strength and reform their connection, just in time to fend off a real Nameless attack, with the help of Tay Sarek, the Guardian of the Wills from Phase 2, who is this hooded figure, they prevail and make plans to leave the planet. Meanwhile, Keeve finally makes it through to Skeer, who remembers who she is and who he is as well, and states that while he lost his reason, he was protecting someone, and they reveal a robed child hiding in the back of the temple.
I should say, it's not just any robed child. It is one of, I think, the Yacomb, which is one of the force groups from the Phase 2 comics. I think they, like, show up, try to join the Convocation and get rejected because they're, like, dark side adjacent, maybe.
Oh, the bonus story from issue 1, right?
Yes, I think so.
Okay, because when I first saw her, it's like, oh, she's a Miraluka, like one of those people with, like, who see for the force because they don't have eyes. I'm like, wait, no, she's covering her mouth, not her eyes. Completely, like, similar aesthetic, different outlook.
She's a Bene Gesserit.
Yeah.
Silence.
We're still in our Dune phase here.
Exactly.
Yeah. I mean, I think that we can all agree this issue was awesome.
Oh, man. There's so much going on here. It slapped.
Yeah, like, I've liked all the issues so far, but they were all kind of building towards different things. And it turns out this is what they were building towards, like just 20 pages of nonstop badass. It opens with, you know, angry, drooling Skeer, and then it never slows down.
You know, even when it goes to the B side, where for like the Sarek and Tarek, which, you know, I definitely saw that their conflict was growing and growing. I didn't realize it was going to come to a head so quickly in this issue, but boy, did it definitely like show some major sparks here. They pulled back into Dringir here with like the visions of that. Now, I did have to go back. I was like, wait, was it Sarek or Tarek? Because way back in phase one,
I also had this thought. So I'm glad that you looked it up.
Yeah. And it was the opposite. Like, the one who runs off is, Tarek, but it was Sarek who was captured by the Dringir.
Okay. Interesting. Which, I mean, their whole thing is, yeah, they are non-binary in their pronoun usage, but they also use they, I think, as a plural, because they have a hive mind between them.
Yeah, was that this issue where they're kind of like yelling at like Orbalin or something like that? They're like, you don't understand. We're like the same person, essentially.
Yeah,
like,
exactly.
If I get messed up, if he gets messed up, I get messed up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and they definitely showed that throughout the series, because like in phase one, when Sarek was captured by the Dringir, the other one was getting affected by it at the same time. Same thing later in the same one, whereas Sarek again, who went with Keeve and was exposed to the Nameless, was starting to calcify and turn all ashy. Mm-hmm. And the Tarek at the same time was being affected by it as well.
It's so funny. I just call them the twins because it's kind of like the clones in the Clone Wars. I've said a few times, last time I rewatched Clone Wars, I was like gonna learn all the clones and know who was who, and that didn't last. So with Tarek and Sarek, I just accepted that I'm not gonna know which is which, because
I'm respecting them by treating them as the same person. So
exactly.
Yeah,
it's what they want.
The ally card.
Yeah, yeah.
No, I think they're great characters. I can't keep track. The naming is clever, and they're probably my favorite part of this third volume, and I liked them from the beginning, but of course they're not the meat of the issue.
Yeah,
sort of the emotional heart of it.
I do feel like it's gotta be like, you gotta do the thing like parents of twins when they're babies, and just like always make sure that they have different clothes on, so you know which one is which. It's like, you know. Yeah.
But if you know anyone with twins, every time you see those kids, they are dressed exactly the same.
This is true.
I
at least seem like a bracelet or something. It's like, oh, yeah, that was Sarek.
I went to school with kids that they wore different colored glasses. And do I know if they didn't switch them? I don't know. But we were in like first grade. That's what they did. We're on a total tangent here. That's my wife's biggest fear is having twins and
mixing them up.
Like, and mixing them up at the beginning, but then getting it right from then on. And so she's like, but then their entire life they've been called the wrong one. I'm like, but that doesn't really matter because you changed which one is which. But
yeah,
we don't have twins. Hopefully I would love to. Anyway,
that's a long tangent there.
Massive tangent. But twins are cool. Tarek and Sarek are cool.
Exactly. I feel like, to continue on this tangent, just because I want to say it here, like if I had twins, I feel like there'd be so much pressure to do like a Sarek Tarek sort of thing where you have to like have the names make sense.
No,
you
that's
know?
Crazy.
Dude, we're going to be talking about all the twins I went to school with. I went to school with a Brian and Brianne that were twins. They were
You have to do something like that, or like Castor and Pollux.
It's so confusing for anyone who meets them.
But I mean, I went to school with quadruplets, so...
Did they all have similar names?
No. Well, I think all the girls did, but there's one dude, and he did not.
Okay.
Oh, man, they really dropped the ball.
Yeah. All right, let's get back on topic.
Yeah, anyways.
All right, yeah, yeah.
Obviously, I think the big thing here is Skeer, but I want to talk about our boy, Tay Sarek, because I was not expecting this. Were y'all?
Mm-hmm. Even in Legends, I think his species, Selphie or whatever, or Sephi, were long-lived. So this isn't too shocking and also not too different because everyone thought the bandage figure of Midnight Horizon was him anyways, so it's exactly. Just a... a slight tweak in our insanity of theories. But no, I did not expect him, at least in this issue, I'll say that.
Yeah. It was really cool to see him back. It's like, hey, look, remember that time you spent reading the Phase 2 comics? They're paying off here. Like, it's this character directly from that.
Hell yeah. I love how we keep getting vindicated for standing in Phase 2.
Caleb, it is funny. I do have to call you out here because you're like in our show notes. You're like a phase two connection, finally. And it's like, oh, I forget you haven't read the books for phase three yet because they've been everywhere.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, but it's into comics, I feel like it's the first like direct tie we've had to Phase 2.
Other than Azrael, of course.
Yeah. Oh, well, yes.
Starlight. But that was not Kevin's comic. It worked so well, even though it feels really similar to the Aslan reveal. Like, that's my one sort of, kind of like how we keep having all these characters survive Starlight. This is sort of a similar move. He's hooded. He's got a dark side artifact on him. He still has the glove. Or actually, I don't know if that's it. Yeah, it's
he was a dark side. But, yeah.
What's his name? Not Creighton's son. The other.
Vildar.
Vildar Mack had during the Battle of Jeddah in the Phase 2 comic. So it's like, you know, is that keeping him alive? Kind of like Aslan's touching the dark side is keeping him alive. I don't know.
It was called the Hand of Sybaris.
All right, cool. Were there two, or is that just the rods that there were two of?
No, the rods is like three ?
Yeah.
But the hand is one. I only know the name of it because I went and found the cover because I remembered it. They just put the name of it on the cover of the comic book. So.
Oh, nice.
Convenient.
Yeah, speaking of covers, it's funny. So if y'all haven't seen the cover for issue 6, Tay is on it. It's a flashback to Phase 2.
But it's like young Tay.
Yeah, but it couldn't have been more obvious that he was going to be back. I still didn't expect it because Kevin's like, we're going back to Phase 2. I was like, okay.
Oh, yeah, flashback issue. Yeah,
story will inform the future. Yeah, because he's going to be there, idiot.
He'll tell it, yeah. They gave him, like, I don't know if we've talked about his appearance at all yet. They gave him, like, the cloak is kind of resembling what he looked at in Phase 2, just a little more age, but he has, like, a sick, like, dwarven-looking beard.
He's got
now.
Big, bushy beard, yeah.
Yeah, and, it's like, great. Long hair, yeah. He looks awesome. I mean, Phase 3 is, like, they're like, what do we do with people? We give them sick new beards and hairstyles. Like,
yeah.
Keeve grew her hair out, Elzar got a beard, and Lena So won't stop thinking about how hot he is in Eye of Darkness. I feel like someone else had a beard, too. Anyway, yeah, it's all about beards.
I'm sure when Comac eventually shows back up, well, he already had a beard, right? Yeah, so that's
so maybe he'll
new.
Be maybe he'll
have a bigger
be shaven.
Beard. Yeah,
yeah. Next, Yoda's gonna grab a beard, grow a beard.
Hey, I mean, if they give us Top Knot Yoda again,
Top
for
Knot
real.
Yoda, if you haven't read the art book for Phase 1, one of the High Republic concept arts for Yoda had a cute little top knot, and I guess they were like, you know, he's not that much younger than him, so let's not get crazy.
Anyway, holy. Yeah, there's so much that happens in this comic book.
Lorna's acting like a little troll here. She's great.
Yeah, Lorna, there was a brief second where I thought she killed Skeer, because she gets a hold of Keeve's lightsaber and swings at Skeer, but Trandoshans are made of stronger stuff than that.
I mean, yeah, that's basically the same hit that Finn survived in the Force Awakens, so I think Skeer will be fine.
Yeah, all right. Yeah, just there's so much good action. I'm just scrolling through this comic, and I loved the whole thing. That's all I have to say about it.
Did you guys last week, and when I was, or was it announced? I can't remember. Did you guys mention Tempest Breaker at all last week?
I don't remember.
Yeah, I don't think we did.
So I guess briefly, they announced a new audio drama for Phase 3, which we all knew was going to happen eventually. It's called Tempest Breaker, also by Kevin Scott, and is an adventure with Keeve, Avar, and Lorna, which I think is obviously very pertinent for us comic readers because these characters have been featured a lot in the High Republic comics. So I'm very interested in eventually how the paths of these characters in the comic book right now are going to lead themselves to this new adventure.
Yeah, and in fact,
I feel like we're kind of at the tail end of one of like the story arc here. Like we might see like issue 7 take us in a slightly different route where we meet up with Avar here.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I hope Avar shows up in the comic and not just in the audio drama. But if y'all want to know more about Tempest Breaker, Eric actually just dropped a interview on the 21st with Kevin Scott and George Mann. They talk about a lot of High Republic stuff, but they also at the end do a good talk about the Tempest Breaker audio drama. And so he mentions it. I mean, it's been straight out of the comic. Will be, so that comes out in what, September or November, maybe?
It's like, is it December? Isn't it?
It might be, yeah. So
it's later this year. It's like late this year.
I feel like it's like December 2nd or something like that, because I remember seeing it and I'm like, what? Like, because Penguin Random House never does December for Star Wars. So
yeah. That was it. That's, yeah.
You know, 7 months from now, or like 8-9 months from now. So I don't know if the comic will still be going like we talked about last week. Mm-hmm. You know, it's going to at least 9. It's probably going to at least 10.
Yeah.
Probably. So maybe the run has either an ending or a natural break. And then we
I think there's. I'm guessing time jump somewhere is my assumption. Because I was reminded recently on Twitter that the character encyclopedia says that phase 3 lasts for like 9 years. So
yeah,
we'll see.
Hopefully they don't do like a new number one like in the middle.
God.
We talked a little bit about the Nameless Attack, which there's been a lot of Nameless Attacks in phase 3. That's kind of the whole thing. Another thing that fooled me for a second, I sort of thought the Drangir were back. Like
I did too. It took me a little bit.
It's like, well, we're on a jungle planet, you know, there's weird dark stuff moving around it, and like, oh yeah, Drangir here. It's like, oh man, they're pulling back all sorts of other characters from phase 1. Why not them?
Yeah. But yeah, all in all, I would say very good, this issue. And a great send-off to Ario. I don't know what the art breakdown was on this issue between the two artists, because I never know how that works. Although I've seen comics where they say which artist did which pages, and that's always nice, so I can know. But the art throughout is killer. Mm-hmm. Once again, just he'll be very missed.
For sure.
Absolutely.
Yeah, very interested to see where the story's going. I was kind of like hesitant on like the dragging out of Skier's arc, but like him kind of breaking through at the end of the issue got me. And I'm excited to see what this little kid is doing in the end of the issue and how they're going to tie that all in. So, any other final thoughts on this issue?
I'm excited to see where this rest of the High Republic goes. It's great. I mean, to pair what Oz said earlier, like, none of the previous issues have been bad, but it definitely was like a kind of a great moment. It's like, oh, this is what everything has been leading up to, is this issue 5 in the grand, like, kind of not resolution, but kind of point of this whole series so far.
Well, I think on that note, one thing that's interesting is the first trade paperback ends after issue 4.
Yeah.
So this is actually going to be the opening to volume 2. I don't know what, you know, to make of that, but this feels more like a cliffhanger. Mm-hmm. I don't remember how issue 4 ended.
It was like them like finding the back of Skier.
Okay, which also a good cliffhanger, but you're right. This feels like an ending, whereas really it's sort of a beginning of this chapter, I guess. But we'll see where it goes.
All right, this episode has been brought to you again by the Bounty Hunt Podcast. Again, if you like Star Wars television, if you like me and Oz yapping every week, you can listen to us talk about currently The Bad Batch and as well with our friend JG. We're always breaking down whatever happened in the episode, making really fun, silly predictions, and also answering listener questions that we get via mainly our Discord channel. So if you like to talk about The Bad Batch, if you like the show, if you like our kind of, you know, opinions and ramblings, definitely check out that podcast as well. It releases every Thursday usually. And again, we also just recently released an bonus episode on the new Acolyte trailer, which we were all hyped about. I mean, we literally said we're going to record for 15 minutes and we went for an hour and 15 minutes on that whole thing. So it's been a lot of fun. We will definitely be covering that show when it comes out in June, early June. So yeah, if you want to do that, want to head on over to the Bounty Hunt Podcast, we'd love it if you check it out. So yeah, thank you again to Bounty Hunt. All right, so we got one more issue to go this week. Well, there's a few more that came out, but we'll kind of get to that. We have Jango Fett number 1. This is a new miniseries from our good friend Ethan Sachs, who we interviewed, like a month ago now, maybe a month and a half ago. And art from Luke Ross with colors from Nolan Woodard. This is kind of following up on the debut of the story in Revelations last year. Mm-hmm. Caleb, what happened in this issue of Jango Fett number 1?
We start with Jango doing some honest-to-God bounty hunting, claiming a rogue gambler for the Crimora Syndicate. We then cut to the plot proper, with a Republic peace treaty signing the for the planet of Glee Alsim. As a sign of good faith, the Republic is returning a pair of jewels called the Hope of Glee Alsim to the system, but they are interrupted as a gang of black armored thieves attack and then steal the stones. Because of this, the Republic has called in bounty hunters to return the stones, and Django is on the case. Unfortunately, his fellow bounty hunters of Vigor Sturk, and more importantly, Aura Singh, are on the hunt as well. Django himself is attacked by these black armored group right before he can get off the planet and begin this chase proper.
All right. This was
There was a lot of blasters and actions and pew 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 goodness here, wasn't there?
This was a pretty solid issue. I'm a big fan of Ethan's work, as I've kind of talked about before. He wove in some pretty dope lore, if I do say so myself. We got a Crime War Syndicate mention, which does not happen that often. I know Marv is probably freaking out right now if he read that issue. We saw the judicials or whatever they're called, the kind of like pre-military officers that Tarkin was a part of.
The Senate Guard there with the blue outfits.
No, not that one. I can't find it right now. But yeah, there's like judiciaries or whatever. It's kind of like a republic. I don't know, peacekeeper service more or less that predates the army created in the prequels. So that was pretty cool.
Ujjari.
And then we got a Megalox prison, which I'm sure, I think that's the thing that is from the, is that from the Poe Dameron comics?
I think so, yeah, actually.
With Gracchus? Yeah. Like, there's a lot of dope stuff in here. And also, like, the whole, like, Glee Anselm and Selmy versus Nautilins. There's a lot
That's from the Clone Wars, right?
Well, I think it might be in Clone Wars a little bit, but there also are stories about it in Myths and Fables from George Mann as well.
Of course. That's it. Like, I feel like I was reading this, it's like, Glee Alsim, why does that sound so familiar? One, it's the home of the Nautilins. And also, if it kind of comes up, it's kind of tangentially related in a bunch of other works here as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, like, yeah, a lot of cool stuff. Chancellor of Valorum sighting. That's a pretty rare one there.
You especially love that because they're saying, hey, and this at the same time, there's this, like, Naboobian Trade Federation deal that's fallen through. So, yeah. Like, you can tell exactly where this is in the timeline.
Yeah,
we always love timeline clues.
For sure. This is a dope issue. I really like it, and definitely cool to see Aura Singh coming back as well. I feel like we haven't gotten much canon content for her, really, outside of, like, her appearances in the Clone Wars.
I mean, that and her mention in Solo, A Star Wars Story, I don't even know what else there is.
Yeah, I don't know if she was in, like, maybe, I don't know if she was, like, one of the, like, stories of Light and Dark or story, maybe.
Oh. Sure.
Maybe, but I really don't even know if she's in that.
I have no idea. I'm sure we'll get a chapter from her and when they do it, the episode one FAFPOF from a certain point of view.
In 15 years, we'll get her point of view.
Oh, she's in the Darth Maul miniseries.
That's right.
17
with like Cad Bane and stuff. Yeah.
Slightly remember that. Yeah.
But anyway. As far as this issue, I think it opens strong. Obviously, I mean, a cantina with gambling is a great place for a bounty hunt to start. But I love how he kicks off his introduction. I mean, he's like, the name is Django Fett. And his name is in the font. Like,
it's in the title font, yeah.
Which is such a silly comic book gimmick that I think is not used often enough for, like, when names get their own.
It feels like one of those, like, Invincible opens from the TV show.
Yeah.
And, like, this is a kind of a weird pull, but this, I wish more comics did this. Like, I see this happen. I'm going to call out One Piece here again. It's the manga One Piece. Whenever they introduce a brand new character, like, if you look at the first, like, the page here where they introduce Django Fett, is they whenever he introduces a new character, he always gives you like a full, like, head to toe, like, picture of them face on, facing the camera. It's like, hey, my this, and then like gives their title card underneath there. So whenever they're introducing a semi important character, it's like, hey, this is their name, this is their title, and this is like a full body shot so you can get their like profile and idea of what they look like. And you know, for larger comics like this, I don't know if they could do it like for they definitely can't do this for every single character, but it's nice to have like, hey, this is the main character. This is him in like a neutral pose, so you can see him from like a good angle, and also this is his name.
Yeah, which they kind of did in the High Republic Adventures last week that came out. Like, there was a big wide crowd shot, and everyone got just a small box with their name and stuff.
Right. Exactly. What I'm trying to say is, you know, sometimes there's so many Star Wars characters, having name tags is a good idea.
Oh, yeah, for sure. And then, I mean, this whole opening scene is just like classic Western bounty hunter kind of thing. It's all just Jango dropping kind of corny one-liners that really work. Where the whole thing ends with him, like the punchline where he doesn't gamble because he's just like that good and badass that he's going to get his guy. And of course, he's the guy. Just
he's great.
Best in the galaxy.
I will say that first, like, they panel with him with like the, you know, the fancy name. I don't know if it's the coloring. He feels like he doesn't fit on that page. Does it like.
The background is just like a flat, like, matte there, so it's just like then they kind of like took the PDF and like dragged and dropped him onto like a different background there.
I think it's like, yeah, it's the, like reflections on the helmet, it's just like it feels like you just got photoshopped in. I mean, it's a very good drawing, it just,
yeah, but I think it's intentionally no background, kind of the same thing, just to have like a boom, Jango Fett, here he is.
Like, this is what you bought the comic for, guys, here you are.
I did notice another lore drop, or, you know, at least, like, interesting connection that I didn't mention earlier, is one of the bars they're on is on Dayu, which is one of the planets from the Obi-Wan Kenobi show, where he, like, sees the homeless clone.
Oh, yeah, that, the Cyberpunk 2077 planet.
Yeah. One day, one of my offspring, or my clones, will be here and see a Jedi.
Mm-hmm. But he'll be down on his luck and in bottle here. Right. One thing I, you know, just because I'm scrolling through here, I want to bring up is I do love, like, in the opening there with the Republic Peace Treaty, they're like, hey, as a gesture of support, we authorize the Republic Museum to release one of its artifacts. Look, it's the super valuable thing that's important to both your cultures. We just had it in a museum.
Right. the British Museum of, like, you know,
of space. Yeah. It definitely feels very British Museum of, like, I know this is important to you, but, you know, we probably stole it like 200 years ago and just forgot about it.
And we would treat it better than you would, so we have to hold on to it.
Which, I mean, maybe they're not wrong, because both of these people want to tear it apart, get their gems back. And then, of course, immediately it gets stolen. So should have left it in the museum.
It belongs in a museum, is what you're saying.
Right. We got to bring back the Imperial Museum dude from the Star Wars 2020 arc when they're stealing the droid on Coruscant.
Yeah, sure.
Yes.
I'm sure he would get a kick out of this.
he's probably not even born yet at this point. Or he might be.
He's pretty old.
He's a little kid.
He's pretty old. So he's probably, I wouldn't be surprised if he's actually like working as like an intern at the place and slowly working himself up.
He could show up.
Yeah. I'm not sure. Does anyone know if this is the first like a visual appearance of what an Anselmi looks like? Because I feel like I've read about them so much and never. I know there might be some art of them in the George Mann book, but I feel like this is the best look I've ever gotten of them.
Their look picture is it looks like it's from one of the Myths books.
Okay.
And there's apparently a flashback in Bounty Hunters 5. So Ethan Sachs is a fan. Of the Anselmi.
Interesting.
Check that out. Their first appearance was in one of the Choose Your Destiny books.
Classic.
So they could be in a picture there.
Nice.
They have a handful of pictures, but no one has read those, so don't worry about that. Jango's got a lot of great dialogue throughout it. Of course, he says, "I'm just a simple man trying to make my way through the universe." Because like, not a day goes by. I also, side note, I rewatched the Boba episode from season 2 of Mando, and I forgot that he says it there too. Uh-huh. He like quotes his dad, which is one of those cheesy things where like Star Wars is quoting itself, kind of like, I got a bad feeling about this or whatever. But it really makes sense for Boba Fett. Like, he would totally try to beat Jango. Like, that's what his whole thing is. And then Jango tries to sound like a badass, so it works. Yeah. There's also another line from him that I really liked. One thing I hate in a lot of genre fiction, and Star Wars is unfortunately guilty of it too, is when a writer will take a like an idiom from English and change just one word to be like a Star Wars word. And I don't have an example. Although I remember one time, I don't know what book this is, and I don't want to throw a writer under the bus, but someone just said, "It's my way or the space highway." And that felt really lazy. Like, but
just like, kinda... you know, don't cry for blue, for, you know, spilled space
spilled
milk.
Blue milk. Yeah.
Spilled blue milk. Yeah. Stuff like that. But, sometimes it works if you make it sound, like it's in universe. And he says, instead of you get a little more bang for your buck, he says, with me, you get a little more clang for your credits.
I like that.
I think is a really good twist on the phrase. This, you know, the credits are metal. They cling together. I like it.
And clang for your credits. Like the alliteration works.
Exactly. Like the phrase is actually adjusted. So Ethan, good job. You avoided one of my least favorite tropes.
Meanwhile, I'm just going to hit you with a don't talk to me before I've had my calf in the morning. Does that work? Is that high effort for you?
I mean, it's just, I hate that phrase in regular English, so that's not really helpful.
I have a question. I don't know if this is like too weird of a poll. Think back to, I think it was the first Revelations. There's like the vision of Sabe before the Emperor,
right?
And she has this weird red helmet that like. I don't think it's LaRocca art. It like visually doesn't make sense to me. I like can't really comprehend what it actually would look like in three dimensions. Mm-hmm. Kind of looks like the Anselmi helmets in this, if I remember correctly. I'm making this up on the spot, so I don't know if it's actually like that. But it had like a weird red bubble. And
I just pulled up the Revelations issue, and that is a weird helmet. I don't think that's an intentional reference. Okay. It looked different enough. The Anselmi ones are cooler.
That's true. I'll give them that. It's kind of like the, what's the Aquaman villain? Manta Ray or whatever? Or Black Manta?
Black Manta. Like, yeah.
Manta Ray, I think, is SpongeBob, so my bad.
Yeah, Black Manta, these guys definitely had strong Black Manta. Like, I love their visual design, don't get me wrong. They looked good.
But it does feel like Black Manta, and I'm not up on my Aquaman lore. I've seen both Aquaman movies.
That's more than a lot of people can say, I think.
Yeah, I was about to say, that's one more than I did.
But they look cool, and Jango messed them up pretty good. Like, good for him. Mm-hmm. Oh, also, did you notice he used, and maybe he's had these in the past, but he used Crosshair's little reflector puck.
I saw that. That was sick. I've not seen that before.
Yeah, which from the Bad Batch, from my favorite moment of the
entire... I thought of you when I saw that.
Yeah,
so.
Crosshair's no scope with Commander Cody. I love bringing those in, and he gets just a dead on face shot bouncing off of Slave One, which I don't think they call by name in the issue.
Don't you mean Jango Fett's starfighter?
Starship? It'd be great if he called it Boba Fett starfighter, which I think the
Lego said Boba. Well.
Yeah, like I just have an idea.
You know, Anakin just made Rey this lightsaber.
Right.
Do you think we'll have like a weird scene where like, not weird, but just like a cameo of like Nala Se or something like that, just like sitting in the background of the scene, be like, this guy, he's got what it takes.
Which that's ties into what I was just about to ask. So this is, it seems to be right before the Phantom Menace, like maybe even days. Or because they talk about the Naboo Trade Federation beef heating up.
Yeah.
So that's 10 years before Attack of the Clones, yeah?
Yeah.
Which Boba, he's about 10, right? In episode 2?
Maybe a little younger. I'd say like maybe like 8 or 9, but yeah, he'd be right around there. Yeah, you'd have to think that we are very close in the timeline to where, because Sifo Dyas has to be alive, right?
Yeah.
At least to set up the cloning. You know, maybe he didn't ever meet Jango.
According to timelines, he was born on Kamino in 32 BBY, which is the same
right
year Phantom Menace takes place. So I don't think so, and I kind of hope not.
The series ends with?
It could end with Jango going home to see baby Boba Fett. And actually, I scratched that. I think that would be cool to see.
I was going to say, like, it ends with, like, yeah, like, Tan Wei showing up or something like that. It's like, I have a job for you.
Oh, I like.
Yeah, I was about to say. I feel like I'm with Jacob here. I feel like you'll end on the like, hey, you've done the Republic such a good service. Why don't you do the Republic another solid? And
dude, that makes so much sense.
Yeah, we're calling it Cosmic Force Seal of Approval.
This could just be like a recruiting mission, basically, for like maybe Sifo Dyas is behind this.
They did say, hey, we don't want any Jedi involved with this. Maybe that's another reason. Not only because they don't want, you know, Dreadlock Jedi getting involved.
Quinlan.
No, they named
Quinlan?
Yes. Quinlan. No, not Quinlan. The Nutullan.
Kit Fisto. Yeah.
Kit Fisto getting involved because, like, they're biased against, like, half the race here. But because, hey, we want someone we can actually clone here.
Yeah, maybe this will help me finally understand the Sifo Dyas plotline.
Maybe.
I don't think anyone has ever, like, hammered out the Sifo Dyas plotline. But again, we haven't even introduced any Sifo Dyas at all, so it might just be a kind of a sharp thing. Do we know that this is a miniseries?
Yes, it's 4 issues.
Okay, just 4 issues? Only 4?
Yep.
Okay. Now, is the Mace Windu miniseries
also 4?
Okay, it's interesting that we're getting a lot more of these 4-issue series, but I'm seeing a lot of parallels between this one and the Mace Windu series, and I like it.
I feel like it's the new standard, because they did it with Sana, too, and they all have the same exact style of, like, interior title page.
Exactly.
Yeah, which we talked about recently with I think the Mace comic. Mm-hmm. I think that started with Obi-Wan, we decided.
Yeah, I can't remember. Anyways.
It looks good. It's a good it's a good series to our kind of visual consistency there.
Yeah. Any other thoughts about this issue, though?
No, just that our theory crafting there at the end made me like it even more. I did like it. I thought it was a good start. What's interesting, all the Revelation shorts so far have been sort of preludes or leading into the stories, whereas this one, I believe, takes place after issue 1. Because it shows Arasing on the job already. And it had a different art. Will Sliney was on the art, who's done a few other Star Wars projects. And I like Luke Ross. I thought Will Sliney's art was more to my taste. The art's still solid here.
I do have another theory, which I think I would read the solicitation and tell me it's not happening. Arasing is on Tatooine in The Phantom Menace because... Mm-hmm. Jango Fett's around and she's chasing him down.
Oh God, we could see the pod race, the Boon to Eve classic. Holy shit.
I could read the solicits and it'd probably be like, that's not happening, but what if?
Oh, I'm not reading the solicits now. I want to be surprised.
I mean, you know, that's the best way to do it. It's just
we also have that Phantom Menace one shot. So, you know.
This could cross over with that.
Got our expectations so high.
Yeah, man, this just became my new favorite mini because of what we just wrote to happen over the next 3 issues.
Yep. So
hear that, Ethan? We're coming for you.
Yeah, or not. Yeah. We're coming for you to schedule another interview after this is over. How about that?
Yeah, and to tell you how you did it wrong.
Well, okay. All right. Well, any other final thoughts before we wrap this up?
Nah.
All right. We had a busy one. So some other issues that came out this week were the one shot, the Star Wars Visions Takayoshi Okazaki #1. It was kind of a prequel to Ronin. We might talk about that a little next week. We also had Thrawn Alliances #3, which I'll just say quickly. Oz and I've read. Pacing is more of a problem than it was the last issue, which it already kind of was a problem. We'll probably maybe mention it a little bit more when the final issue comes out in a couple weeks. But we saw Grisks.
That's the thing. We've been talking for 2 months about when are we going to get Grisks? We got them. But
he still left you hollow on the inside.
Yeah. It left us feeling hollow.
Oh, it did leave us feeling a little hollow. Yeah, it's just this, and I know I said from the beginning, I'm not the biggest Alliances fan, but this book doesn't do it justice, this adaptation, because, and I don't think is it Jodi Hauser?
Jodi Hauser, yeah. It's not her fault. It's the fact they only gave her 4 issues, and that's a lot of book. Issues,
and there's no way to get the detail. It's just having to skip through so much. Mm-hmm. And they're barely getting to spend time on Padme's storyline, which is the best part. But yeah, like Jacob said, we'll probably devote half an episode to it when the series finishes up. So maybe it'll stick the landing. We'll see.
Yeah. And then next week we got Obi-Wan 6, which Ryan not going to talk about. Let's be real. And the Crash Landing one shot. So that'll be exciting. So probably Visions a little bit and Crash Landing for next week. So stay tuned for some more great comics discussion, unless Crash Landing gets delayed this week, which straight up could happen. Anyways,
there's a preview for it, so it probably won't, but Dark Horse, you never seems too amazed.
All right, once again, this episode has been brought to you by Bounty Hunt. If you want to check out some more content about Star Wars television and hear Oz and I go on about the Bad Batch, check out Bounty Hunt, out every Thursday. Thanks again to Bounty Hunt. All right, and that'll do for this week's episode of The Cosmic Force. Thank you so much for joining us. If you're looking for other great podcasts about Star Wars, nerd culture, and sports, be sure to check out our great lineup on the Utini Podcast Network. We also would appreciate it if you left a review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify, because that really helps us get the word out about our show. If you're a proud member of the United on Patreon, thank you so much for all your support. An extra special thank you goes to Brian Dooley, Carl Sander, Michael Fry, and Raymond Bezinski on our High Council, as well as Captains James T., Ashley Ingalls, Colton Fife, Chris Carrizo, and Sally and Chris Eilerson on our... Oh, they're captains. They're not the Alliance High Command anymore. I'm sorry. Head on over to Discord, where we're continuing the conversation about the latest issues in the SW Comics channel. And huge shout out to our editor Kyle for all of his excellent work in getting us to your feeds so quickly, and Wes for his Utini network support. Thanks as always to our fantastic listeners. That'll do it for us this week. May the Force be with you, and we will see you next week.